What I've just described is how this stuff works.
Yeah.
And I didn't cover all the technical details, but I think I gave a pretty fair picture of how it works overall. And I think anyone can understand that. And it's not anything mystical. And then a couple of things. Once you understand how the game works, you should understand that it's all made of people. There's no creature there.
Well, I must say that's the most incredible demonstration, but where are the humans, officer?
Why, they're right here, son, waiting in the lobby to use the power of that ton of coke.
Oh, then we must be very near the president, Mr. Devish.
Yes, Dagwood. He's the terminal bus, the output.
I'll bet you he really puts out.
That's right. Everyone's always asking him questions.
Oh, well, maybe my friend here would like to ask something. Huh? He's been with us since before the beginning, sir. He must be bursting with a short question about his place in the future.
Oh, is he your friend?
Yes.
Well, I'll ask him his name.
Oh, I'm sorry. Could you state your name? Please state your name.
Oh, do you want me
Please
to...
Please state your first name.
Clem.
Thank you.
Clem.
Now we can introduce you and some of your selected neighbors to our president.
Like, you're not talking to some mystical being and saying, make me something that's halfway between a fire hydrant and a dog or whatever it might be. All you're doing is you're going to this giant statistical accumulation and having random changes tested and tested and tested against the correlations that were set up statistically until this thing pops out. And the images are often delightful and amusing. And the same thing can be done with text now, where you can say, I'd like to have... A waffle recipe in the style of Rumi or whatever, and it'll do that. And people are doing that like crazy. Everybody loves that.
That's a falafel idea.
Okay. You're pitiable. Anyway.
Summarize The Great Gatsby, but do it in the voice of a grade 9 kid. Literally, we put in the prompt, summarize The Great Gatsby in the voice of a grade 9 student. This is what it spat back in 15 seconds. Okay, so The Great Gatsby is this book about this guy named Gatsby who is super rich and throws these crazy parties. It's like a commentary on excess and the shallowness of the wealthy, like in the 1920s. That's what the AI wrote. Wow. Would that fool you if you were a teacher?
Just right now, I got confused about your age, Gavin.
If ChatGPT can convince you it's a grade 9 student, what else can it do? Let's put that to the test with a game I call Are You Smarter Than a 6-Week-Old Chatbot? Earlier, we gave ChatGPT a few tasks to do. I'm going to give you the same tasks, and we'll see who came up with what. Craig.
Oh, God.
Go, Craigie.
We asked ChatGPT to describe a Granny Smith apple in the style of Donald Trump.
Okay.
I am giving you the same challenge.
Okay. Shh. Granny Smith apples, tremendous apple. Apple computers, Macintosh, that's an apple, also very good. Apple pie, nothing more American than apple pie. Little tart, I love a little tart, everyone knows that. Very tart. Granny Smith, not a lot of people know that, but it's very tart. True, it's true, it's very true.
Amazing.
It's so good. Oh, my God.
Here's what the AI came back with. Let me tell you something, Granny Smith apples, they're huge, believe me. The biggest, most beautiful apples you've ever seen. They're so crisp, so delicious. Nobody has better apples than us. I'm giving the point to Craig on that one. Besting the AI. All right, Emma Hunter, coming to you. We asked ChatGPT to explain reproduction in the style of Mary Poppins. We'll hear its response in a moment. But first, how would you tackle the assignment?
Okay. In every job that must be done, there is an element of fun. You find the fun and clap. Don't get it. It's awful. There's a burning sensation.
Amazing, amazing. Here's what the AI wrote. Well, my dear, reproduction is the process by which living things create new life. In the case of humans, it's a bit like a spoonful of sugar to help the medicine go down.
Yes!
It may seem like a lot of work, but trust me, it's worth it.
But it is a lot of work, isn't it?
I'm going to call that one a draw. It was pretty good. Pretty good. All right, Ali Hassan, coming over to you now. We asked ChatGPT to write four lines of a Shakespearean sonnet about hamburgers. Now, I know you used to be a chef.
Yeah.
And I know you're a Shakespearean actor, secretly trained in the back, in the dark room. So, a few lines of a sonnet about a hamburger. What do you got?
Shall I compare you to a burger of ham? Thou hast pickles, onion, and mustard, but not ketchup, mayo, or jam.
Nice.
Perfect.
I don't have anything that rhymes with mustard. This burger is better than anything I've ever heard. There you go. There it is. There.
Very well done. Here, again, in like 5 seconds, is what ChatGPT wrote. Oh, juicy beef with seasoning so bold, thy taste doth make my senses all behold, with lettuce, cheese, and ketchup all so hued, a masterpiece of food so well imbued.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. It's so good.
I'm going to give that one to the AI.
Yeah.
So am I.
And the same thing is true for computer code. There's another version where you can ask for it to program something. These all work. There's slight differences in each case based on the type of material you're dealing with, but it's basically the same idea.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So it's just massive, massive computation to create massive statistical records of differences between things or similarities between things, and then starting with random information and gradually passing the test of all of these classification statistics, and then you have this magic stuff comes out. I think it's fun. People seem to be delighted by it. They're just, I don't know how long the craze will last. I think people eventually get sick of it. But here's the key thing is that it's all made of people. Like, if you're saying, oh, well, we don't have to pay artists anymore because we can just get free art from using the program, well, no.
No.
It's real artists put the stuff in the first place. And so the next thing we have to do as a society is make sure that people are credited when they had a special impact on something.
And that's
that
a huge issue.
Paid, yeah. That they can feel proud.
Yeah.
That they have some autonomy about their role in this thing instead of just being scraped and used by
intellectual property.
Exactly. There's absolutely no reason that there's no reason this can't include intellectual property. And for all the, I know there's a bunch of people who are open source, free culture people out there who say, no, intellectual property is terrible.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is, in the future, there's two choices. One choice is we can kind of go for a non-market society where we have some sort of communitarian principle. And I honestly don't see the path to it, and all the experiments in it have gone bad. And I've tried living in communes a bunch of times. It's just a hard thing to do with humans. I understand the appeal of it, but it's just really hard. If you're going to have a market at all, and you're going to have a high-tech future with a lot of automation and programs, you can only have people have autonomy, dignity, participation, pride, and humanity if what they do in the information space is part of the market. It's just that's the only viable path. And it doesn't have to be terrible. It can be really cool, I think. If it's available as a tool, it helps people.
Hey, what's this all about, Bradshaw? You know I never carry a rod.
Yeah, but it's murder what some people can do with a car, and I got witnesses to prove it.
There's a man! Keep me away from him!
Take it easy, little lady.
I don't know why you're doing this, Nancy, but it doesn't change my feelings about you.
Oh, Nick, you're such a tool! He did it!
All right, take it easy, little lady. All right, now let's get these facts straight.
The problem is you can take something similar, or maybe a little more capable than that, and package it as a creature. So, for instance, it's not widely available yet, but we can already synthesize movie and TV scenes. We can already say, I want to have so-and-so on a motorcycle, like so-and-so being some famous actor or whatever, on a motorcycle being chased by a giant flying snake.
I saw that movie.
Yeah, I know. Well, that's actually an interesting thing, isn't it? That maybe everything's already been made, so these programs
can't
do anything. But let's presume there's some movie that perhaps it's been made, but nobody remembers it. So you can synthesize it.
You know, I am writing
You are?
You have been talking about virtual reality, and I thought I would let you know, of course, that there's no sense in just writing a book anymore. So I'm writing my memoirs three-dimensionally, so to speak, with interactivity in mind.
George, you're going interactive.
Yes.
You're totally modern.
But an autobiography where the reader not only gets to imagine himself, you see, to trying to live someone else's life in your mind, but actually the reader, that is, the experiencer, will get to be me in this autobiography.
You
will be able to replay my big scenes. You'll choose other women for me, you to marry. You can step into Tirebiter's shoes.
Well, I've been too close to you sometimes to wonder if I want to step into those, George.
The challenge is fix my life, please.
George, it's been wonderful talking with you, and we want you to keep in touch with the Digital Diner because your perspective is so very special to us.
Thank you so much. It's surreal, if nothing else.
And I have an old...
Congratulations to all of you on this wonderful program.
And then at that point, you stop paying people to make movies. No, you shouldn't, because there are many perils in this. One is just a society where people feel small and useless, but it's a fake feeling because they're actually essential to the functioning of this. But instead, we hide them and we make them feel unimportant. Mm-hmm. That's a society that will fail. That's a society where people will blow up and feel that they're being made obsolete. But there's another problem, too, which is if you're just regurgitating old stuff, there's some fundamental edge of creativity that's lost.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can say, I'd like to see the subway map in the style of Da Vinci or something, but you can't make up Da Vinci. You know, there's like this limit. There's a ceiling. And so a lot of people in AI are saying, we're going to crack that ceiling. And this is the thing they might call general artificial intelligence. We'll make it conscious. We'll do this.
Mm-hmm.
There was an article in the New York Times called The Taboo Against Making Programs Conscious is Finally Being Broken. It's so stupid. Like, consciousness is a matter of faith. It's not a technical or scientific thing. But there's this weird religious drive that people have.
Welcome to Pastor Flash's Hour of Reckoning with Organ Leroy at his organ again. And the 50 voice St. Louis Aquarium Choir. I'm Deacon E.L. Mouse, but dear friends, in these days of modern time, when you can't tell the ACs from the DCs, well, aren't we all yearning for someone who can turn on a little stopping power? Dear friends, I mean a smoky glass. Don't you think I mean a lightning rod with which to chase these spooks away? Don't you know I mean our own pastor, Rod Flash? He's been up for a week. But he's coming down.
And it makes me think maybe a lot of this stuff is a symptom of a spiritual hollowness in our society where people are looking in all the wrong places for some kind of a sense of context and meaning and connection and all that. And they're looking to stuff from tech companies to fill that is practically like saying, oh, here's my pocket, rip me off, abuse me, please, 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 oh, big tech company. I mean, it's a really bad attitude, and yet so many people have it.
You know, and that's a good segue.
Can I just say one thing?
Please.
I'm sorry to interrupt you.
Yes.
I'm with a tech company. I'm an executive at a tech company. I love the tech world. I think we're powerful enough that we can afford to criticize ourselves, so I do it. But okay. I'm not like a simple-minded, like, oh, tech is bad and everybody else is good. You can't make the world better by identifying the bad people and saying, get rid of the bad people and everything will be okay. It's not like that. So I still embrace the tech world. I still work in this stuff very, very centrally.
Yeah.
And yet I think it's okay to be honest about it. I think it's essential to be. So I'm in a very unusual position that way. My feeling about these things is that nobody knows how to make a perfect system. We don't know mm-hmm. how to make a perfect technology. Mm-hmm. We don't know how to make a perfect economy. We don't know how to make perfect politics. So I kind of feel like all the different political and economic ideas have something to offer. And the way humanity has gotten by is kind of by awkwardly bouncing between them as they get sucky and just trying to find a path, the least sucky path mm-hmm. through the ideas we have, you know. So markets help sometimes, they hurt sometimes. Politics helps sometimes, sometimes it hurts.
Will you know his platform? 6 inches off the ground so no one falls off. The guaranteed annual year. One organism, one vote. One man, one channel. Papoon!
I think it's all a bit awkward. None of us know everything.
There's this wonderful, very short science fiction story where the greatest supercomputer in the world is created, and all of the leaders of all of these countries get together to initiate it for the first time. And the first question they ask it is there a God? And a lightning bolt strikes the machine, and it says, there is now.
Hot dog! And what was the word?
Hot dog!
Hot dog, yes, dear friends. A mighty hot dog is our Lord.
And as we're in this era of rapid technology change, and the truth is, technology has been changing rapidly for a long time. I'm not even sure it's changing more rapidly now than it did a century or more ago.
It just keeps happening.
Yeah. So as that's happening, human roles also change. And I really do believe we have responsibility not to leave people behind. I really believe that we're a rich society. This is a thing that really hits me lately. I think a lot of people who advocate for a social safety net are accused, oh, you're just outright communists who just want to...
You're a socialist.
And a lot of people who think that there's too much of it are accused of being absolutist free marketeers who want nothing but billionaires. And I don't know, maybe some of those people are the things that they are accused of being, but the most important idea to me is that the truth has to be somewhere in between, and that truth has to include fundamentally not losing people as technology improves, because otherwise what is the point? Like, why are we doing it? And do you know what the four freedoms are or were? It was an idea in American politics, part of the New Deal, spoken. So here's somebody who's listening will get this right. I know Roosevelt said it, but I don't know exactly where it originated. But anyway, there's four freedoms, and it's like, you know, freedom of speech, freedom of worship. But one of them is freedom from want, which seems to me to be just right, correct. Like, it's crazy to have a society where we can spend billions of dollars on these kinds of programs I've just described. And people should have a place to live. They should be able to eat. They should have access to medicine. They should have access to education. I don't know that they need access to every weird little luxury thing you can buy on Amazon or whatever. I mean, I think you still have room for a market, and you still have room for people to make different things of their lives, and for some people to end up more materially accomplished than others. I think trying to stomp that down ends in tears too, but to at least cover the basics.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I just can't understand how anybody can be interested in high tech advancement without also wanting to do that. Cause otherwise what's the point? So that just amazes me and disturbs me. And lately, just anecdotally, I have been seeing an epidemic of people who are middle-aged to maybe early elderly or something, who used to have excellent careers, had jobs, owned homes, and for whatever reason, maybe they had a health scare during a period where their insurance was down. That's mm-hmm. a very typical one. But they end up in this state where they're living on savings or are out of savings, and they're in a very precarious situation, maybe without a place to live, maybe with no living relatives, no one to call, and just like this terror at the future. And I've just in the last week, I've met like five people like that who all had previously been doing okay. And it's just, I don't know, I'm just flabbergasted that our society finds that to be okay.
It's widespread. And I think a lot of it does have to do with the rapid change of technology, and suddenly people who have, you know, because we were born into an age of specialization, good or bad, and things change so rapidly that suddenly you are faced with obsolescence. What you do doesn't apply any longer,
and yet some of what you do might start to apply in new ways.
Right, but it's not an easy path to find. And, you know, I've seen people who literally were making hundreds, $600,000-$700,000 a year, clients I had, you know, in the studio business. Things changed so rapidly,
yes.
But some of these people actually were living in their cars after 2009.
Well, let's just take a look inside your beautiful new home.
Come on in.
Thanks.
As you can see, this car's been fully equipped with a complete line of extras designed with your mind in mind.
Wow.
Here, for instance, an all-weather climate control in red, blue, or green with a special oxygen danger indicator level.
Gee whiz.
And here, of course, your own personal remote control picture-sized color TV with matching brass knob. Just reach above the bar and press the button right there under the handy laminated imitation masonite Wild West gun rack with a look of real wood for the channel of your choice.
Ralph, can I try it?
Sure.
Don't we do it in the road here at Route Bird Motor during the ditty of wet tomorrow? Don't give it a go.
I like those colors.
Isn't that nice?
Nice. Can you get UHF?
No,
I don't believe in flying saucers.
Got
a little blue halo around my head. Can I, can I get a little more orange in his face?
Sure, right there.
Where, right?
No,
under the trigger here?
Yeah, that's right.
A second, got to get the safety off. Oh! Look at that blue horse.
All right, yeah.
I think I've...
look at the muscles on that dude. He's got muscles in his ear.
That's Steve Reeves.
No?
There.
No,
that's Steve
Reeves. That's Agnes Moorehead.
Oh, yeah? I've seen this one. Where's the bathroom?
Huh? Oh, right next to the radio there, completely modulated with dual left and right stereo speakers and two compatible frequencies.
Given how much computation there is and how many things are connected and how it's unclear who gets what data and what they do with it and what can be done with it, it's the most natural time thus far in history to be paranoid in general.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And yet, paranoia is disempowering and makes you nuts.
Dips Hotline, this is Anthrax, Ashcroft.
Mr. Ashcroft, I'd like to report some suspicious activity.
Are you a loyal American trucker, letter carrier, train conductor, ship captain, utility employee, or other?
Sir, I'm a loyal American meter reader other out here on Crystal Meth Road in Elmertown, and I'm getting a big surge of power in a residence out here.
Good tip. If it's an indoor pot factory, we can take it out with a weed-seeking Rocky Max 2, but it could be men of the desert persuasion.
Who?
Arabs, son, pumping up the heat to simulate their homeland conditions. Look, tipster, can you take somebody into custody or something?
No, sir. I just read the numbers going around the little windows and report...
That's more than they'll let me do. Listen, this conversation is strictly Orange Alert Sub Rosa, and I'm not even talking to you, right?
Anything you say.
I didn't say anything.
Right.
Now get inside and see if they'll offer you one of those little cups of sweet coffee.
Sir, I don't drink coffee.
Then would you wave, please?
Huh?
Look up and wave.
Okay.
Say cheese.
A limbo.
Got it. Now, you'd better leave the area, tipster, so as not to incite any collateral damage. The Immigration Ranger Squat Squad is only minutes away.
Sir, can I get a copy of my picture?
Of course you can. It's all part of Operation TIPS, your volunteer Homeland Terrorism Information and Prevention System. Train now to be the extra legal eyes and ears that the feds need to get up close and personal with neighborhood terrorists. It's toll-free, 1-555-666-TIPS.
So there's a little bit of a disconnect between being powerful and being sane in a funny way. Like, it's better to let go of a bit of paranoia, even if it might be justified, just in order to not fall into the paranoid personality trap, which really makes you nuts. And it's a different question from whether it might be right or not. It's just not worth the price.
Are you concerned, Jaron? Are you concerned?
I mean, I am. Like, frankly, if you want to ask me what I'm concerned about right now, I know that the tech companies in Silicon Valley pretty well. They're mostly people, a lot of the founders are friends, a lot of the key people working in them are old students or something. And honestly, I think worrying... I think worrying about the NSA is a little bit, you might find this a little bit overblown, because honestly, they're not in a much of a position to do much with that kind of information. I had an interesting conversation with Edward Snowden about this once, actually, and even he kind of agreed, like, the principle is super creepy. I am worried about TikTok, because TikTok is operated, the Chinese Communist Party is actually more awful than the other parties who have access to the stuff generally. You know, that might not be a popular thing to say among my left friend circles in California, but it's true. It's really awful, and something has to give with that. That one's terrible. The main thing that social media does to people isn't specific abuse or manipulation using the data, although that does happen. And I want to get to that in a second, actually, because that's interesting. But the main problem with it is that when you're subject to a behavior modification program or what's called operant conditioning, there's side effects, personality distortions, where you start to become cranky and you start to become, you have a harder time having fun or being happy. You start to get a kind of a nervousness. Time becomes different for you. And that social media disease issue is the main damage. And that's the thing that kills adolescent girls. That's the thing that gives us a particularly stupid and pathetic kind of populist politics all at once everywhere in the world right after social media arrives. So it's not so much that the people at the center are using this to some purpose. In fact, just to be clear about that, I've had the dubious pleasure of being able to go to the events where the big tech companies meet their biggest advertising block buyers and impress them. And it's a crazy closed event that includes, like, you know, big dance numbers and productions and stuff to try to impress the advertisers. And the advertisers are sold what in my mind is a bill of goods, where, like, we have mind control, pay us, and then all the people on our social media platform will be programmed to love your stuff. But the truth is, it doesn't work that way. I think you mess everybody up. You give them social media disease and make them more nervous and paranoid and more vain, and that you ruin their attention span. You do all this stuff, and that's called the it's a two-step process that's usually called engage and persuade, and the engage part does work. And it's really very similar to gambling addiction. It's an activation of a behavioral addiction, but then the persuade part is pretty spotty. So a lot of the people who are pouring all the money into these companies that have made them so incredibly rich so incredibly quickly don't necessarily get so much in return. It's more that they're afraid of being left out. They get a seat at the table, basically. That's my view. That might be really cynical, but I believe it's closer to correct than believing that they actually are successfully programming people to buy one brand of toilet paper instead of another or whatever.
We look at January 6th. We look at what's happened in the social media scape and how it's depressing and negative. And, you know, one could imagine this is because, gosh, you know, humans suck.
Oh, this sucks.
Sucking is good, too, right?
But you make a very good point, Jaron, that it isn't really that. Humans don't necessarily suck. It's a craven advertising model that is created dopamine addicts out of us.
Commercialism.
And
consumerism.
To reduce, when you look at the word consumer, you know, and the derivative of it, it's not a proud term to say. But the point being that the way in which to stimulate reaction is to reduce it to the flight or fight mentality, and that is the result.
as this memorable broadcast from the Pissgarten Olympic Auditorium in Hochstaffel, Bavaria, a blistering day in August 1932. 23. The exciting scene of the first famous sports broadcast, the Schmeling Herring Fist Fest.
I'm in the back of this great big auditorium where the great big white man and the great big black man are training a tremendous series of great big punches. Oh, and Herring's down in the sauce. The white man is down, and the German is up, and they're raining terrific blows on the black man. Now they're pummeling the gypsies and the Jews. Oh, band of brothers! And here comes the Spanish air farce. Oh, it looks like a rehearsal for the final solution. Oh, those Spanish flyboys are so sexy. Schmeling is circling, but now the referee, a feisty little fellow with a funny-looking mustache, he's stopping the fight. He's raising his right arm in a stiff salute for silence. Oh. Everyone in the hall is doing the duck. I mean, doing the same.
Sigfried!
I think Sigfried! They're all asking to leave the room. Sigfried! So it appears from Pissgarten Hall that round one goes to the Jerrys.
Man, was that exciting.
So it's capitalism in a way.
Yeah, so basically there's some quirks to the human mind that come presumably from our evolutionary history that can be taken advantage of by people who want to addict you to this or that. And in this case, it can be automated once you're attached to the devices. And so there's this widespread world of addiction, and it just has consequences. It makes people ill. And I advocate just dropping all the accounts. I don't have any. I think a lot of you are sort of worried and like running on your little hamster wheel, afraid of being left behind, but there's actually not a need for it. That's what I think. I don't know for sure for any given person.
You I can tell you from experience that my use of Facebook is primarily to share funny ideas with other funny people.
And I post pictures.
Yeah, I post pictures too.
It has an impact on you. It changes what you see of the world. Like the types of news you get, what you see of your friends, what you see of all kinds of things is being modified by a big AI program like the one I described earlier, based on the input from whatever you do. That's not necessarily terrible, but sometimes it is terrible, you know? And it's just made all our politics everywhere a little cranky. It's made all our relationships a little on edge. It's given, especially for young people, it's just made things a lot. By the way, a lot of it's great. I love what TikTok has done for dance. I love what social media has done for like just being able to promote a little party or something. Mm-hmm. There's a ton of I love people with weird diseases being able to find each other where they couldn't before.
And you, Hideo, are suffering from farmer's lung, usually confined to barns and sponge warehouses. It is attributable to a hybrid fungus, which lodges in the massive air conditioning systems that supply oxygen of sorts to the big buildings that your daddy works in. Although the same bug can be found in home furnaces, it's often rendered ineffectual due to the fact that poor people can't afford air conditioning and are forced to run their furnaces to heat their homes during the summer. This fries the fungus. We doctor people use the word microsporifera funi in referring to this little pest, and literally it can be translated as funny spores, long known as the cause of Theodore's disease, running sores in athletes' feet. Recently, this microscopic troublemaker has also been blamed in the nasty disease labeled Hartman's palsy, formerly Strassmann syndrome, the only cure for which is death. I'll answer any questions, dear friends. Just write me if you still have the strength. Until next week, this is Dr. Whiplash. I'm out for lunch.
There's a ton of great stuff on it. Nothing I'm saying negates any of that. I think we could have all those great things without the crap. I really do.